okey doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
Like he could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on the rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Katie Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good afternoon or good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us tonight for this show. And it has been a while since we have said those words. I am joined alongside my news and sports guest, Joe Kennedy, and our brand new producer for this year, Leo Stoddard. Boys, how are we feeling?
I'm feeling great, guys. It's great to be back. For so long, it felt like we had no sports to talk about, nothing going on. It's ironic because we were pretty much the last three that were on air at Arch Madness. We marched to St. Louis, and then the sports world stopped. So it's great to be back with you two again. Great to be talking sports. Great that we have stuff to talk about. How you doing, Joe?
Yeah, it's great to be back, definitely. And great to be back at the station, too. I haven't been down here since March as well. Good to see everyone, too. It's been so long, but... you know, we'll get by, we'll get through it all, and it's just nice to see everyone again.
It is, yeah. It's nice to see that, you know, we're all back on campus. It was a bit tough trying to get through those last couple months being online learning, but, you know, we're all here. For those wondering, how are we doing this show? Well, we got our producer Leo in the studio, and then Joe and myself are in a room across from the studio. We're sitting across from one another, 6 feet apart, of course, with a guard, like a glass guard in front of us, and then we are speaking on the broadcast talent. So I guess it's cool putting the headsets back on.
It's like a broadcast. Yeah. It's like another, yeah.
Or it almost feels like you guys just don't want to be with me right now. That's the vibe I'm kind of getting.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's the only bummer. We can't, like, see everyone else face-to-face. But, hey, we got a great show planned. I guess let's just start off. We were talking about a little bit, you know, the sports world kind of shut down in March, as you mentioned. We were there for Arch Madness, which in the Heartland was supposed to happen. That didn't, and then everything else that was going on over the summer and then into the fall, the ISU and the NBC are like, yeah, we're not going to do any fall sports.
Yeah, it was kind of like just like a domino effect of how the sports world was affected by this pandemic. So I remember March 11th, way back when, I went to the Blackhawks game that night against the San Jose Sharks. So as my dad and I are driving to the game, I get a notification that Rudy Gobert from the Utah Jazz tested positive for the coronavirus. I was like, wow, that's the first professional athlete to get test positive. Like, I wonder how that's going to impact things. Then as the game's going on, like, we get a notification. March Madness might happen with no fans. And then it just was a domino effect. All these, by the end of the night, the NHL and NBA had postponed their season. March Madness had canceled. And then I remember getting a text from my brother, Jose Sandoval, the man, saying, so, like, we were texting, like, you guys think we're still going to get to go to Modlane for Hoops in the Heartland? And then, yeah, that got canceled shortly afterwards. Yeah. But that was one of the last ones to cancel, so we were holding out hope.
Yeah, and then also with the domino effect, another domino effect is how the colleges and the conferences have been canceling their fall season. It seems like it went from, like, Division III, they first canceled theirs, and then it kept slowly coming up to the FCS. And now, like, the Power 5 conferences, some of them aren't even canceled yet because they really want to play. And it's just crazy to me to see that all happen.
Yeah, that's interesting you mentioned that with the Power Fives. At first, it got canceled. I mean, Redbird fans were kind of bummed out because we were supposed to open the season in Champaign against U of I. It was a big game for us being able to go down there and see what we can do against an FBS school. The fans were looking forward to it. The students were, even the athletes. That's what they were practicing for. Ever since, you know, we got eliminated in December, that was their main focus, and then it just kind of crumbled. But with, as you mentioned, with those Power 5 conferences, like Trevor Lawrence, he's trying to advocate, like, hey, we need sports right now.
Yeah. And Justin Fields, or the Big Ten, said today, or today I believe it was, that they're still going to not play the season, and they're still holding their word with it.
You
so
know,
as well.
I almost feel like while the athletes are taking all these precautions to play, it's almost on the administration, on the adults that have failed the students here, because the Big Ten directors did not meet until August 11th to discuss a plan for returning to play. You know, you had months to come up with some kind of idea, some kind of protocol to follow, and that didn't happen. So now, while the students have, for the most part, been training, been waiting, been hoping, it's almost like we've been playing this just waiting game, haven't done any kind of planning, and now that the season's here, it just feels like nobody's in sync, and that's definitely going to be a big hurdle for the college sports to overcome. And you almost feel bad for the students because it was is something completely out of their control because they weren't the ones in these meetings, or the lack of meetings.
Yeah, and they haven't said anything about how the fall sports senior athletes, they haven't said anything about how if they can come back next year, correct? Or did they say something about that? I don't think they have yet, because they already said the spring of this year they can get an extra year. So it'll be definitely interesting to see that as well, if they'll allow the seniors to come back for the fall sports this year.
I think that would definitely be the right thing to do.
Yeah, I assume that would happen because they did for the spring, but I guess you can't assume anything with the NCAA.
Yeah, honestly. Then with football going on, with this whole pandemic and stuff, two of our big defensive players announced in the past week their intentions to transfer, which is a big hit for Redbird football. Devin Taylor and Romeo McKnight are both announcing their intention to transfer, and it's kind of a big bummer because they were two of our key defensemen last year, especially in our playoff run.
Yeah, that's definitely a tough blow for the Redbirds, but you almost have to feel happy that these guys might be looking at what's best for them, because both of them, Romeo McKnight, I felt like was the most underrated player on that defense last year. He really held down the defensive line, and these guys might have a future playing professional football, and if the Missouri Valley Conference isn't going to play, and they might be able to go somewhere where they can play, get some tape out there, and prove to NFL scouts why they're a next-level player. Like, you almost got to say props to them for doing it, because if the Valley's not going to give them that opportunity, at least somebody else will.
Yeah, and I'm really happy for them, too, as well. Devin Taylor last year had 5 interceptions and 19 pass breakups, and it's just good to see him to go move on and maybe get an offer to the FBS and get into a Power 5 team and get to see him excel there and hopefully go on to the league as well after that.
Yeah, the Missouri State game we called, Joe, I don't know.
Oh, he had 2
Devin
picks,
Taylor
right?
Was the most noticeable Redbird defensive back that game. So while selfishly we might miss them, we almost have to feel happy that they are getting that opportunity.
Definitely. You know, whatever is good for them is what's good for them, you know? So I'm happy with that for them.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, big ISU sports. I mean, it's kind of a bummer that we're not having any ISU sports going on right now.
Just because of everything that's going on. Like, volleyball got canceled. That was a big bummer. Soccer, too. So there's talk about it moving to the spring, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Logistically, you just wonder how that's going to happen, because you think in the spring, if that happens, you're going to have volleyball, basketball, all like, and I think that'll actually be it, all operating out of Redbird Arena, but the time slots are just going to be very crunched, and so in terms of safety, like, there, we might have to go throwback and start playing games in Horton Fieldhouse again.
Yeah, and one sport where I think that could have been playing right now was golf, and ISU has a really great golfer, David Perkins, 19th ranked in the nation. He shot an average of 69.89 last year. And being 19th in the nation, you don't see that a lot, especially from the Valley. And so, but I feel like with golf, they could have played with a little social distancing. But I guess traveling-wise, it would be really difficult
right,
for them.
Going
because
from state
they do
to state.
Travel in like a bus, not like the PGA where they go all by together.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see where you're coming from. I mean, we've seen even the professional golfers, they were doing their thing with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. You know, they were getting to play with some professional football players to raise some money for charity, and then I think the FedEx Cup playoffs are like starting to come back. So they could have done it maybe they could have probably maybe spaced out the tee times a bit more, just to give them more space and minimize the impact, and maybe have them wear a mask when they're not golfing, like, and just maybe just give each of them a golf cart and just have them go and, like, don't have a caddy or anything else for them.
Yeah, that would have been a good idea, I think, as well, too. But golf will go on, I guess, for the Redbirds, because they got their canceled season in spring, and then now back-to-back seasons they gotten canceled, I guess, for them.
Yeah, that's the same thing with Redbird track and field and cross country. They were really excited trying to start their outdoor season, then cross country as well. So one of the girls I was talking to, Rachel Hickey, she was saying that, like, kind of stinks that both or like two straight seasons got canceled. Because I never really, like, thought of it that way. It's like there's some people like her who are both on the track team and the cross country team.
And definitely with the track and cross country program, their aspirations were sky high. Obviously, the women's team indoor completed, I believe it was their third consecutive Missouri Valley Indoor Championship. They were so motivated. They wanted to get out there and do it outdoors. And so then for them not to get that opportunity, and many of those athletes are on the cross country team too, so they just feel like you lost two potentially special seasons, seasons that could have been some of the best in Redbird history, even this season.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel bad for all of the senior athletes, you know, in the spring who got, you know, gypped of this spring season, and even the senior athletes this season, you know, especially for football or volleyball, you know, they're trying to finish their collegiate career strong, maybe potentially go professional, play somewhere, like maybe overseas, but they're not getting that chance. Hopefully in the spring. I mean, do you guys think there could be Redbird sports come springtime?
I personally think there could be. I think it's going to depend on the sport, like what we were saying, track and field, golf. I feel like those will definitely happen, but like football, I don't really know, because football has a lot of people on a team, including walk-ons. It can be over 100 and coaching personnel, but basketball, it's only like 25 to 30 at most. So basketball has a greater chance too. It just depends, I guess, on the team size and how big the sport is.
Yeah, I agree with that in terms of team size. I also think the amount of precautions taken comes into effect too. Like, will there be enough tests available because we see in the NFL the players are getting tested, what, three times a day? Will we have that many tests for all the, what you said, hundreds of ISU football players? And that's only one team. Like, so we're going to need an amount of testing for all players. And I saw an idea thrown around where maybe put all of the athletes in one dorm or one hotel, so they are kind of separated from the rest of the student body. But then that brings into the effect, is that ethical to do? Like, they're getting deprived of some of the college experience in that regard if they're not allowed to interact with their fellow students or go to class and stuff like that. Like, are they willing to make that sacrifice to potentially get a season in the spring? I think that's something we're going to have to consider.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And Leo, you brought up a good point with putting all the athletes in the dorms. We've seen a lot of different things where some leagues might be playing in a bubble versus not. But we'll have to see what happens. We're actually going to talk about that when we come back from break. But our Red Zone question of the week is back. And for our listeners, do you think Redbird sports will be played at some point during the 2020-21 season? Our answers, basics, yes or no. Or every vote counts, so we'd like to see your opinion. But we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a bubble versus a normal season. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZMD.
Well, you heard our QB1. Welcome back to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZMD. Anthony Ferretti, Joe Kennedy, Leo Stoddard with you guys. Joey Dwyer, sadly not here with us. He's still part of our team, but he had to go home this weekend, but he should be back next week, and we're excited to have him. Ironically, it was us four that were on the last show, as we mentioned at the top, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, we were able to swap one Joey for another Joe in terms of Dwyer for Kennedy. We'll see how that trade goes. Didn't get any draft picks or cash compensations but we'll see how
we still miss the other Joe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we were talking a little bit about how sports have been altered. Leo brought it up before the break of maybe putting all of the players in one dorm together to try and minimize it. But we've seen, as sports are trying to make their way back, we've seen the NHL, it's had a big bubble format. The NBA is in a bubble. The MLB is going as well. But they're playing as if it were a normal season. The only difference is that there are no fans. So let's dive into this.
All right, well, let's talk about the MLB. So what I think about the MLB right now is that they couldn't really do, like, a bubble because I feel like the season's so long, and they're doing their whole regular season. They're using all 30 teams. They're all going to be playing. And they would be, if you go to the World Series, you'd be in the bubble for about 5 months or even more if you include the spring training they did in July. So that would be taking 5 to 6 months away from your family, and that's all 30 regular season teams. And within the NBA, it was only a small majority, then another small majority left when they went into the playoffs. So I think that's why the MLB kept going, because it's just such a long season.
Well, what I was going to say about the MLB is I feel like they're making it up as they go along. Because we've seen these teams that do bubbles. The NBA, I think, is a really good gesture by them. After a certain point, after a certain amount of quarantining, they were able to let some of the players' families rejoin them in Disney World. So they, and then they had a lot of different activities for them to do with their families in there. So it is, they still feel like they have their families living with them and such. But the MLB, it just feels like they didn't have as much of a plan as the NBA.
Yeah,
NBA
they didn't know what to do either.
We've seen two teams with major outbreaks, and that's impacted the schedule now, because now they're trying to make up those games that were lost by the Cardinals and the Marlins by playing more doubleheaders, and so you're putting more strain on these players as the season goes down. So I really think they maybe could have done a type of bubble. If you look at how they're doing the schedule, teams are only playing other opponents that are in their geographic region. So you maybe could have done, I believe it would have been four bubbles in each geographic region. You could have had all the teams in the same city and just had them keep playing each other, because that's what they're doing anyway. I mean, the Sox
they proposed that. Didn't they propose that, like, beginning of quarantine, kind of? They were going to go Arizona, Florida, and Texas. Yeah, like the three little division thing.
So, I mean, that might have been a smarter idea, because then you'd have it somewhat contained. But so far, it seems to be working well. They're just kind of, it doesn't feel
Did
like
Did you hear about the Mets today?
Yeah, I heard about that. One player and one staff member tested positive, and their game was actually against the Marlins, so that game is postponed. The Marlins haven't gotten to play much. Even same thing with the Cardinals. They've only played 13 games this season, which is crazy, and everyone's like, I mean, they're just getting gypped. ISU alum Paul DeYoung's on the team. He tested positive for the virus. He should soon be able to get off the COVID list and be able to get back into the swing of things for the Cardinals.
Well, what we've seen with the MLB, too, you mentioned all these players testing positive, is they are letting these players live their normal lives. And we saw when the Cleveland Indians were in Chicago, they had two starting pitchers just go out to restaurants and bars, and you have to worry about, like, if they want to have their season, you have to think, like, okay, we're allowed to go join the public, but we probably shouldn't be doing it in this capacity, because we're running the risk of getting exposed and exposing all of our teammates. So I think if they're not bubbling, there is a certain element where you have to use your discretion when you're going out, almost like college students, you know? Mm-hmm. If you want the season to go on, you have to take the necessary precautions.
Because it only takes one person. That's literally it. Everyone could be following the rules on the whole team, but it could take just one person, staff or player, to just get it. And then it could, even though they're in the clubhouse, they're wearing masks and everything, they can still pretty easily spread it around through the clubhouse.
Yeah, I was
just
going to say,
one guy.
Yeah, they're just really close in that dugout. And then you look when they're in the field, you got, I mean, especially on first and third, you know, you got the first base coach, you got the runner, if they were able to make it to first base, you got the first baseman. That's three people probably in a 6 foot span, or like 6 foot radius, which is crazy. I mean, you see it in the dugout, you know, all the guys want to be together, even after they hit home runs, you know, you see them like fist bumping, you know, hugging each other, and that can't happen as much now.
Yeah, Rizzo had the hand sanitizer though on first base, so he's been prepared.
I did see that.
He's been prepared for it.
Yeah, it was funny. Just gets the first base. Hey, nice hit. Care for some hand sanitizer?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
And then on the flip side, the two teams that have done the bubbles, I got to give the NHL and NBA props. I know a lot. Normally, I'm pretty hard on the NHL about how they do things backwards.
Yeah, you are.
But since they've gone, Joe knows. But ever since they've gone in these bubbles, they've had no players test positive. So they've been taking all these precautions, and they've been working, and they've resulted into a pretty good on-ice, on-court product with both in both situations.
Yeah, the play has been insanely good. Like, especially in the and the NBA, I've been so shocked. The past couple of days, it's actually slowed down a little, like defensive-wise, especially in the first half. But the play has been insane. It's because of depth perception. They don't see as much in the background as compared into arena. It goes really far back deep. So it's like an AAU tournament because they're all in the same place.
Right.
Like Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray, they saw each other after game one just getting food. Like, they're just walking around like it's an AAU game, like with your best friends. It seems pretty fun to me and cool, but also not because you miss your family and everything as well.
Right. Yeah, I'd say so. It's kind of like a give and take. On the one hand, you know, you're getting to play the sports and, you know, continue the season. But on the other hand, like you said, Joe, you're not going to be able to see your family and then the fans too. You've seen a lot of players and coaches, you know, saying that, you know, the teams, you know, they feed off that energy, you know, especially if a team were to be on a run, the fans would get into it.
Definitely.
Then, yeah, the other team will call a timeout. The place goes just crazy. Now that can't happen. But I guess it does give them a bit more time to focus because, I mean, you've got people, you know, saying a bunch of things to the players and using, you know, a bunch of different language. But now it just gives them, you know, time to focus and communicate with one another.
Yeah, I think without the fans, I think it takes away a certain element of the intensity where maybe not home ice or home court advantage might not matter as much, but it's almost like the players, they've in the NHL they've been talking about it, where it's like you don't even notice once you start playing just because you got your adrenaline and tunnel vision where you're not even noticing that fans aren't there because you're so focused on the game at hand. And it's almost been kind of funny listening to these games because you hear a lot more of what's going on the field, on the court. You hear the players chirping at each other, or I was watching a Cubs game and you could hear them like doing like a chant almost when Rizzo was up at the plate. So you just hear everything that the players are saying, and I'm kind of liking that, like, because that's something you don't get to hear when there's a 20,000 person crowd.
Yeah, that is an interesting point you bring up. You can kind of hear what the players have to say. It's always nice to see with some of the leagues, like, you know, where they'll mic up a player or coach and see what they're doing for practice or like for the first half of a game. But now you can kind of see that they do have the virtual fans, but I feel like that's not,
that just looks so weird.
Yeah,
it looks worse than the fans in video games.
Yeah, it's literally MLB the Show characters, and that's what Fox did. But another thing that I was thinking about with the bubble and everything, how the background noise, like the crowd noise, because I remember at first soccer started like in March because it was still in Europe or April, and then like at first they didn't have any noise and it was like the weirdest thing ever, you could hear it. But
right.
Then once they put on the noise, you notice that at first because it's back and they're not really there, but once you get to watching the game, that's all you're really focused on is just the game and not really the background noise. So for the fans' experience, it's really just not being there, but for the players, I guess it is a lot different because it is just them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely say so. I mean, you mentioned with the NHL, they've been doing a great job with their bubble, having the Eastern Conference teams play, I believe, in Toronto, Western Conference teams playing in Edmonton. I just read on their website that they reported their third straight week of zero positive coronavirus tests, which is amazing, which is showing how seriously they're taking this and that they can really contain everyone. You know, they don't want anyone going out partying. And then with the NBA, their latest COVID-19 results a couple days ago, they returned zero positive tests. So it seems like the bubble has proven to be effective for these couple teams. A lot of people are saying, though, could the NFL do something like this? Like, have the NFC maybe one area, AFC another area?
Maybe not the Seahawks because of their rookie cornerback, Kamaz Silverland, or I think his name is. But he tried to sneak in a girl last week, and he got cut off the team right away. So that shows, like, what they're restricting against every team. And every single coach is going to be like, don't do it or else you'll get cut. So I think the NFL, I don't know. What do you think, Leo?
I was thinking about the NFL. Because every team has these state-of-the-art practice facilities, you can almost keep the players there. I know, you know, in the Bears case up in Hallis Hall, like there are lots of hotels by then. So the Bears have money, so they could purchase a hotel and just have the whole team like stay in there all season pretty much. And yeah, maybe you could get their families like to visit them and keep it going. But yeah, keep the players in not captivity, but in quarantine during the week. And I think with football, it might be a little easier to do in baseball, even without the full bubble, with the players traveling and such, because it's only once a week. So if you have players, if there is an outbreak where players do test positive, you could have them quarantine, and you know before they come into contact with another team, because that was the problem with the Marlins when their outbreak started, was then they started playing the Phillies before they knew they had the positives. And where baseball, you're playing teams every day, but football, mm-hmm. you play a team, then you're off for 6 days, so you have a better reaction period to figure out, okay, these many players tested positive, how are we going to react to it?
Yeah, I definitely think that, but yeah, I agree with what you just said, especially how they get the whole week-long break, and they don't have to go against another team the next day. I could see the NFL doing that, and I don't think it'll be a bubble either. They'll do what you said and just... They have those new facilities, and they're able to space out, hopefully allow their families back in. But it would definitely make a crazy year for the NFL because there's a lot that can happen, too, there as well.
And I'm thinking with the NFL. The NFL never passes down the opportunity to make some quick money.
Oh, no.
If they see college football isn't playing, they see an opportunity where they could play Thursday,
Monday,
Friday,
like
Saturday,
day.
Every day
Sunday,
of the week, basically.
Monday. The NFL is going to spend some money to take whatever precautions they can to get this season and make the money that's available. So I think that league is going to
And as a fan, I would enjoy that, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
If I had football every day, just the whole week, like two games or whatever, three games a day, that would be really enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what the NBA is doing right now for the playoffs. They got four games every day, and that's been really fun to watch from 12 to like 10:30 at night. It's been enjoyable, and that would be really fun to see with the football, too.
Yeah, especially with the new rookies that have been drafted. We're seeing the draft, James Robinson.
James
Sadly
Robinson.
Didn't get drafted, but was picked up by the Jaguars. Luther Kirk picked up by the Cowboys, so we'll see what they can do. It could be exciting, especially, with these the Power 5 big guys that we have. Like you got Joe Burrow and them that could make a run for something.
Definitely, and I'm optimistic for both Robinson and Luther Kirk because they are both, while they did play in the Missouri Valley Conference while they weren't FBS, they are both so talented, and it seemed like you could just see the work ethic with James Robinson where he didn't get drafted. He's playing at a disadvantage right now, but he's just going to outwork his way into an NFL roster, whether it's with the Jaguars or somebody else. I think he's going to find a way to stick around in the NFL for a few years.
Yeah, I think he can stick on the Jaguars, too. They got Leonard Fournette, but other than that, they got... I don't think they really got much else depth on the offensive side, on the running back, too. So I think he could definitely squeeze in his roster spot, maybe, but it's really hard to go out and go undrafted and make a camp, come out of camp and make a roster spot right away.
Right.
Yep.
And we did see with the 49ers making it all the way to the big game where having depth at running back is so important. So while the Jaguars do have Fournette, they could be too deep with Robinson, too, but... It's just going to be tough, different situation, because there isn't a preseason. There's not as much camp leading up, so he's going to have to make the most out of a limited opportunity.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the NFL does, what the NCAA does. Obviously, fans really want these sports one way or another. I mean, they got to be played. I mean, I was thinking, after not seeing sports for so long, I mean, we had, bags... and stuff going on.
The Ocho. Every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
My mom and I would watch that. That was a lot of fun.
But we'll have to see what happens. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back. We are going to go to the Diamond. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. ISU alum Paul DeYoung, he's been trying to do what he can for the Cardinals in the short amount of games that they have played this season. But we're going to bring it in talking about the MLB. As for the listeners that may not know, we bring on a news and sports guest every week. They get to choose a topic they want to talk about. Joe Kennedy wanted to talk about some Major League Baseball in the modified season that they've got. They got a 60-game season. So, Joe, take it away, my man.
Oh, yeah. I especially want to talk about it because we got the Cubs Sox coming up this weekend. And I know Leo is a big White Sox fan, I guess. I don't know why or anything, but it's going to be a big series, especially because the beginning of the year in the preseason or exhibition, the Sox won 2. And so far, the Cubs are just looking really good. But as I'm looking down their roster and their stats right now, they haven't had that great of production from their top players, though. Chris Bryant has been out for the past week, and he's only batting 177. And Javier Baez is down there, too, 189. And even Rizzo is only batting 231 right now. It's really Ian Happ who's coming up to bat for them, making big plays, driving in runs when it's needed, and also David Bodie. He's like the super sub of all time. He'll come up to the bat, and he'll just hit a home run, hit a double in the eighth or ninth inning, and take the lead for the Cubs. And he just came out of nowhere, too. This guy was in the minors for 6 years, about to quit, and he just comes out, and he's been clutch ever since his debut for the Cubs.
What I feel like with the Cubs is it's almost been the opposite of what everybody was predicting was going to happen to them. Because you look at their roster going into the season, you got Bryant, you got Baez, Rizzo, Contreras, Schwarber, all these big hitters, but there were a lot of questions about their pitching staff. So the consensus seemed to be, well, they're just going to have to outscore the mistakes their pitching makes. But right now, they've been getting great pitching from Kyle Hendricks, from Yu Darvish, even Alec Mills, who wasn't even supposed to be in the rotation to start the year. It's their pitching, and even some of their bullpen arms have been doing a lot better than expected. Talking like Jeremy Jeffries.
Yeah, Jeffries has been really well this year, but they need a closer spot with Kimbrel. He's been not good. They've had about five relief pitchers. That's basically why they lost every single game, not because of the offense, it's because of the relief pitching. They come into the sixth inning up three runs, and then they put in their relief pitcher after Hendricks throws a great outing, no runs or one run, and then they put in like Rex Brothers, and he comes in and has like about a 12 ERA. But they do have some great arms in the bullpen as of right now, like Rowan Wick and Jeremy Jeffries, and like Dan Winkler.
Edward Alzola has been pretty solid too so far.
Yeah, that too as well. But their starting pitcher has been top three in the MLB for sure, with Hendricks, Darvish, Lester, Mills, and Quintana is coming back too soon, so that'll be another great boost as well.
And you take a look at the offense for the Cubs. As you mentioned, Baez and Bryant struggling a little bit, and those were kind of the key players that you wanted to rely on coming into the season. But we've seen Ian Happ, he's been really stepping it up for the Cubs, batting .315 this season, 6 home runs, 14 RBIs, a .438 OBP, and 23 hits. So he's really been helping the Cubs, give them a promising future. Then Nico Hoerner, too, I know he was promising a bit in the middle of the season, but if we can get him going, too.
Yeah, and going back to what Ian Happ, last year he was out about the whole year down in AAA just because he was doing so bad. And right out of spring training, he was batting below .180 last year. Never really got to groove until August last year for the Cubs. But this year, right when spring training started, before COVID happened, David Ross saw a lot in Ian Happ. Even before it, he was talking a lot about him, that he's going to have a great year. And right now, he's leading the team in on-base percentage and batting average, slugging percentage, and home runs and RBIs. So he's doing it all for the Cubs, and it's someone that you really didn't see that happening. Right. You kind of knew he was going to be a solid, serviceable player, but not what he's doing right now.
You touched on the manager a little bit. David Ross, the former World Series champion with the Cubs as a catcher, now back to manage. I think he's been extremely responsible for most of the success they have, because we've seen he's almost different a little bit from Joe Maddon, where Joe would have a lot of different lineups, change his lineup almost over, analyze the lineups based on who was pitching, like with the righty-lefty matchups. But it seems like Ross, he just plays the best nine out there every day. Puts guys where they should be hitting, where they should be in the field, and a little bit more cutthroat, because Maddon gave guys more time to work their way out of slumps. Ross isn't like that. He's putting the best guys in there every day. He's trying to win every game every day.
Yeah, he doesn't care who it is, what it is. He's keeping his same boys out there every single day. If they're doing well, he's sending them out there. And also another thing comparing to Maddon with Ross is keeping the starting pitcher out. If Hendricks was out there, he has about 80 pitches on him in the fifth or sixth inning, runner on first and second, Maddon would take him out right away. But Ross trusts his guys, pitchers or players on the field. He trusts his guys, and I think a big part of that is because he played with a lot of them. He knows they have what it takes. He knows what they know how to win, and that's why he's been so well for the Cubs as a manager.
I think that was the big question coming into the season, is how will he be able to differentiate himself from now he's not one of the guys anymore. Now he's their boss. So how is he going to walk that line between, I'm still their friend, we had all these memories back when I was a player, but now he's a manager, and now he kind of has to be tough on these guys. I think it's been working so far. So it's really been very interesting to follow his progression as a manager.
Yeah, I think so. Especially, I mean, you mentioned that he played with a bunch of these guys in 2016 when they won that title, so he knows a bit of their work ethic and where they are, and maybe he can see kind of where the Cubs can go.
Yeah, well, Leo, how do you think? Let's talk about some White Sox action right here.
Please.
So they've been on a tear as of late. Their offense, right, has been hitting bombs left and right.
Well, that'll happen when you play the Detroit Tigers for
Well, yeah, well. Yeah. Still, that's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean,
four in a row, a couple days
Casey
ago.
And Casey Mize
right?
came in for the Tigers, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's hop in on the White Sox. Let's take a walk through the garden here. The White Sox, they faltered to start the year. I think drawing the Minnesota Twins to start the season was a big wake-up call because a lot of White Sox fans had sky-high expectations. Maybe I was a little guilty of that before the season.
Yeah.
We might have won the World Series against those two games in the Cubs in the preseason. That's certainly
how it felt
on Twitter.
That's what, yeah.
But facing the Twins to start the year was definitely a wake-up call, and now we've seen with the Sox. Like, they've had some rookie moments. They're a young team. There was a game against the Tigers that they dropped that maybe they shouldn't have, where Dallas Keuchel came out and said, we need to take a more serious approach to the plate. And then the next day, they routed the Tigers. Eloy Jimenez had a four-hit day. Tim Anderson coming back in the lineup has just really energized this team. So they're a young team. They've had some growing pains this year. But we've seen when everything's clicking, this team could be something special offensively.
And we've seen Luis Robert, too. He's really been stepping it up the way he's coming in. He's having a stellar rookie campaign for the White Sox.
He hits baseballs, and he hits baseballs hard. With I think it was, what, his first 10 base hits were all with an exit velocity of over 110 miles per hour.
He's been smacking the ball since he was like 16. I remember seeing videos just on Twitter of just a 16-year-old hitting a bomb like off the bat, like 110 miles an hour. But
even defensively, he just looks so smooth. I don't know if you saw the other day. He looked like Kelly Leak from the Bad News Bears, running from center field to left field.
Eloy was just sitting there, right? So well, that was probably good of him because Eloy's not that great in the field. So thank God Robert was there for that.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of situation we're in with Eloy, where maybe long-term he's a DH or a first baseman, but right now they need him in the outfield. Or we saw it with Kyle Schwarber across town, where he struggled very much in left field. But then he slimmed down, he worked on that defensive approach, and he got better. I mean, we saw Schwarber go Bo Jackson yesterday, catching the ball off the wall and throwing out the runner at second. So I'm not saying Eloy can be Kyle Schwarber nor Bo Jackson, but there's still room for improvement. He's so young, and you know if he just needs to work at that, and he could really be a more complete player.
Yeah, he definitely will be, and he will get better. He's still super young, but what do you think about the manager spot? Rick Renteria, Leo, do you think he'll be here next year?
I feel like we just really don't know what Rick Renteria does, what he does well. Like, I really mean that. He's been the manager for, what, three seasons, and he's never had a competitive roster as a manager, even with the Cubs. So, like, everybody says he's a great rebuilding manager. Like, he keeps it loose, but a lot of his just game-time decisions just really make me scratch my head. Like, there were times at the start of the year where he's putting Nicky Delmonico at the two spot in the batting order, and, like, he just has his guys that he's almost overcommitted to, where he likes a lot of these guys, but he needs to take a page from Ross, and you got to play the best nine every day. And it was frustrating at times, but I think we're just going to have to see what it is with Ricky. I think this is his first real test as a manager. You finally have a competitive roster. What are you going to do with it? If he proves he can't manage with it, then I think the Sox do need to look for an upgrade. Maybe bring in somebody more experienced, somebody that's good at developing players, because your window's starting now. Like, the rebuild is over.
Bring in Paul Konerko, maybe.
I'm too scarred for Robin. I don't want to see... I know it's working for the Cubs, but I don't want to see another franchise legend come in and manage this team and just tarnish his legacy. Paulie is sacred to me. I don't want him managing my club.
Yeah, that's true. I never really thought about that, what you just said. A club legend coming in, then they just do really bad. You're like, wow, I don't like
Robin
him
Ventura.
Anymore.
He's probably the best third baseman the Sox have ever had, and because of his very frustrating stint as manager, a lot of fans just don't appreciate him as much as they probably should as a player.
Yeah.
But, you know, this Sox team, with the new expanded playoff, all you got to do is finish top two in your division, even top three, and get the wild card spot. If you make the post, it's going to be a weird postseason. So all you got to do is just get in and have hot pitching at the right time. And they have some solid starting pitchers with Lucas Giolito and Dallas Keuchel. That 1-2 punch is about as good as it gets in baseball. But then that's where it gets shaky after
those
two.
Gio Gonzalez. And he used to be a pretty serviceable pitcher, but he's not anymore.
He's
not like 4 years.
And Dylan Cease is young, so you don't know what you're going to get out of him most outings. Sometimes he's still figuring it out, obviously. He hasn't pitched a full season in the majors, so some outings he has the control. Other outings, it's just buckle up and just hope he can get through the first two innings because he can be wild sometimes. But so they might, with the trade deadline coming up, they might be in the market to acquire a starting pitcher if they really want to go all in this season.
It's going to be interesting to see if anyone does make any trades at the end. But, Leo, three games this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Lester, Keuchel, Hendrick, Cease, Darvish, Gonzalez. What do you think it's going to go?
2-1
Cubs?
Sox win.
Okay.
No, I don't think
anyone's going to sweep. Definitely.
I was going to say, I think the Saturday is going to be the Cubs, Hendricks versus Lopez, that's going to be a lopsided game, I think, because...
Or it's Cease, I think.
Cease. I'll have to look that up. But still, Hendricks, he has the Sox number. Whenever he pitches against them, he does very well. So
he's
I think that's going to be a tough one. I think with Keuchel on the bump Friday against Lester,
that's probably your best opportunity.
That's going to be a fun pitching matchup, just two crafty veterans on the bump, seeing what they can do. And then what did you say the pitching matchup was Sunday?
Darvish, Gio Gonzalez.
Ooh, that's... Yeah. Okay, the Cubs might get this one, but catches on a good day.
You literally don't know,
Watch out. But if the bats are hot, who knows? Maybe I'm just hoping for, a 13-10, crosstown classic game, no defense being played, just everybody hitting the long ball. That's what I'm hoping for this weekend.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That'd be pretty entertaining, seeing Robert and Jimenez. Maybe sure. Who knows? Maybe see Bryant and Baez, get going.
Yeah.
A little home run derby at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. I mean, obviously with the Sox, they were struggling a little bit, but now they're starting to show signs of promise with the young guys they have. They've been getting on this winning streak. A lot of guys have been able... like I said, to show promise for them. We'll have to see what happens, but that'll just about do it for our baseball coverage. But when we come back, we're going to finish the show moving from the diamond to the ice. Keep it here. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Well, welcome back to the Red Zone, baby. Once again, Anthony Ferretti, Leo Stauder, Joe Kennedy with you guys. We've had a great show so far. We talked some ISU sports, the bubble, seeing how that goes. We got the MLB, but now we're moving to the ice in the NHL bubble, seeing how the playoffs have unfolded. The Blackhawks, they might have shocked a bunch of, or maybe a handful of people by upsetting Edmonton the way Connor McDavid was playing, but then they sadly fell last night, I believe it was, to the Vegas Golden Knights. So Vegas took a 4-1 series in that one. They moved on. But what are your thoughts on how the Hawks played after not skating for nearly, 4 months?
Well, I think the Edmonton matchup was a very beneficial one for them because Edmonton... Well, it was about as much of an incomplete team as the Hawks were, where Edmonton didn't really have much in terms of a true number one pairing defense. They lacked the bottom six scoring. I think the Hawks had more scoring depth and certainly had the better goaltender in that series. So, yeah, that series was a little frustrating at times because, whenever McDavid was just on the ice out there.
He had points or 12 points in the series,
and
he contributed
a hat trick in the second game.
Yeah. That's on coaching, because when he was out there, especially when the Hawks had the second change, Jeremy Colleton was not putting his best defenseman out there. There was the one goal where he blew past Slater Cuckoo and Olimata. Yeah. You put your two weakest defensemen out there against probably the best player on the planet. So I think the Hawks' coaching put them at a disadvantage in that series. But you saw Corey Crawford and the rest of the Blackhawks core really stole that series because Kane, Taves, Kubalik, and the rest
Kirby.
Of Kirby Doc
Kirby
just
Doc.
Went off and were able to outscore the mistakes the Hawks were making out there. and got them past Edmonton. And then the Vegas series was just...
Yeah. No one expected them to really make the playoffs, like, before COVID happened. Like,
well, because
no one knew this was going to happen. They're like, oh, the Hawks are making the playoffs. But then all of a sudden they do make the playoffs. And they... Games 2 and 3, they didn't play that bad until kind of towards the end of the third period, I feel like. The second, they had good second and first periods.
Against Vegas?
Yeah. They were up 2-0, and then they kind of just
I think what it
let
was
it go by in those game 2 and 3 there.
Where Vegas, they play at a much faster pace than the Blackhawks, and they can roll four lines. So like you mentioned, they'd start off good. Like, they'd start off really competitive, but then like they just get worn down because the Hawks pretty much were rolling 2.5 lines. They were double shifting most games. So I think Vegas was just so much faster, so much deeper that it wore them out. And we saw Vegas was getting goals from their fourth line. That takes so much pressure off the top goal scorers when the depth players score. That's how the Blackhawks won the 2015 Stanley Cup, was because you were getting depth scoring. The Hawks didn't have that luxury of having fourth liners being scoring this series, because for the most part, they weren't able to put the fourth line out there when the games mattered. They had to rely very much on Kane, Taves, Keith, Kubalik, all their top players, so they just couldn't keep up with Vegas and the pace they were playing.
Yeah, and even they were struggling a little bit, obviously, and then the power play too. It could have been a bit better, trying just to be able to capitalize. I mean, there were sometimes I think it was like 5-on-3, and they still couldn't score. Yeah. It's like you have a 2-man advantage. You're basically given the goal. You just got to find the right place to shoot it. They couldn't even do it, but Kubalik was pretty promising in his rookie season, the way he was able to just go all out in these playoffs.
Yeah, he led the NHL in goals with 30, I believe, right, Leo? And then in the playoffs, he led the rookies up at one point in goals and in points with 8. And the Hawks had, right now, as of now, they have 3 rookies who led the rookies in playoffs in the top 6, including Matthew Highmore, Kirby Dach, and Kubalik. So we got 3 rookies that were in the top 6 as of now in points from the playoffs. Yeah. And that's just good to see, good to look at towards the future.
Yeah, I think there is promise there, because that was the one you knew they were going to get wiped by Vegas. I think that was a given.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's all about getting playoff experience for your young guys. So now you could, and we saw some of them flourished under it, some of them floundered. We saw Kirby Dach had a very good postseason.
Yeah.
We saw Kubalik had a good postseason, but we saw Adam Boqvist kind of struggled. But now that it wasn't his best postseason, but now that maybe he's been in those games, he could learn from his mistakes and build off that for next year, because obviously all of those players are very important to the Blackhawks' future.
Yeah, they are. And something that's not important is, I don't know, maybe the head coach or the GM, Stan Bowman and Colleton. What are your takes on those guys?
Yeah, I was hearing about that. People are trying to discuss, like, is Jeremy Colleton the right fit for the Blackhawks?
No, he's not.
Even Taze and Kane coming off the ice, they didn't say anything to Colleton.
No.
They walked right by him.
Yeah, I saw that video. They were just looking at each other like they had enough with Colleton.
Yeah.
No, Jeremy Colleton
doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, not even that. He does. His lineup decisions are awful. He doesn't.
Vegas would put their fourth line up against like our first line every start of the period too.
When he had the second change, he didn't use it. We saw in the Edmonton series, or no, in the Vegas series, there was a play where the Hawks were down by a goal. They had an icing and a TV timeout. Now Joel Quenneville would use that to rest his top line. Vegas was going to have to keep their line out there, and Colleton just throws the fourth line out there for an offensive zone faceoff. Like, what are you doing there? Like, that was just really frustrating. And then game 3, you're down by a goal with a minute left. He didn't take a timeout. Didn't want to give his players a rest. So then, because Taves just got off the ice with about 90 seconds left in the game, didn't call a timeout when he had a whistle. So then, with the game on the line, you didn't have your best players. You didn't have Taves or Keith on the ice. You had the Strome line with Calvin DeHaan and Connor Murphy out there.
Dude. In game 5, when they put in Quenneville and like 2 minutes left with Taze, like, you're putting Jonathan Taze, a 3-time Stanley Cup winner, Olympic gold medalist, with John Quenneville, who...
You had John Quenneville playing...
Just hasn't done anything, and he's just not... He's not a first liner or a second liner
at
all.
No, John Quenneville's... he could be a fine fourth line player, maybe.
Yeah.
Fine, whatever.
Maybe.
But the fact that you had him play 13 minutes in an elimination game is an indictment on the coach. He wasn't even... To keep up with Vegas, you needed faster players. And he wasn't even... He's the biggest and slowest player of the bench players they had.
Yeah.
You could put in Dylan Sekura or Philip Kurosev. At least those players could play a little bit of a faster game. But, Yeah, the coach needs to go, but the way the Hawks operate, I don't think he's going to go because Stan Bowman's not going anywhere, it sounds like, if you're reading the tea leaves.
Yep.
Danny Wirtz said, basically implied that he had an extension in place. So Stan's going to get at least a couple more years, and he can't fire Colleton. He's married to Colleton because he fired Joel Quenneville to bring him in. So they're going to give him another magic training camp, see if he could figure something out. He won't.
Seems like it's all about him for Bowman.
Yeah.
Well, he made it on Quenneville that the team is bad, so like, oh, let's get rid of our head coach.
Yeah.
Even though it's just
not
the problem.
Not always
it was
coach
the players
We've got Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. I mean, they are great players, three-time Stanley Cup champions, really helped us, but they've played, what, over 12, 13 seasons in the league?
Yeah,
like,
especially
their
Seabrook.
Yeah. Like, they're not going to be able to be as fast as they would, especially, like, keep up with the young players in the game, like Jack Hughes or Connor McDavid, like those guys.
They're at
by
the point where they've put themselves in salary cap trouble by paying players for what they've done in the past. And it's at this point, you're not going to be able to get out of most of these bad contracts. You've got to wait it out and try to surround the so you're stuck with Seabrook. Keith's here for the long term. Kane Taves aren't going anywhere. So you have to surround them with cheap, young talent. And then when those players price themselves out, you just got to trade them and replace them with younger, cheaper talent. Like, it's just going to be a cycle until they're out of those contracts.
And so many teams have done a better job of this. Like, Boston Bruins have been an amazing team since 2009. The Penguins have been an amazing team since 2000.
Pittsburgh, they've been
okay, well,
relevant.
I mean, it's like Crosby.
All right,
it's
like
Crosby.
2 years ago, but still, they were making to the conference finals.
About,
they were making it every year, not missing the playoffs or losing first round. Even in 2011 and, like, 12, like, or
yeah,
12,
you know, they
I guess 11,
then,
like,
yeah. You're right,
the
Joe.
The Penguins have
I'm
always
sorry.
Been doing something. Like, every year they've made the playoffs,
I was
going to
say
besides
about
this year.
About right? Boston, why they've been able to stay successful. Patrice Bergeron, probably the best two-way center in the game, only makes $6.6 million. When you set the bar there with your best player takes a hometown discount, you know, Brad Marchand's not going to ask for more than Bergeron. David Krejci's not going to ask for more than him. Mm-hmm. So now everybody has to make under that, pretty much. But when the Hawks set... The Hawks don't negotiate. They got the Kane Taves contracts done as soon as they could, paid them as much as they could. And so now, you got to pay Seabrook $6.8 million, Keith $5 million, DeBrincat $6 million. Yeah, Crawford got a 6x6 deal. You set the precedent where you pay your guys and you pay them well. So yeah, you're rewarding them for what they've done. Fine, maybe they've earned that, but that's not how you operate in a cap league. The salary cap and father time are undefeated in the NHL, and the Hawks are finding out why.
Yeah, especially in the NHL, man. It's hard. No, it's one of the hardest leagues to just win every year. It's never the same team in the final basically every single year. Teams that win the final sometimes don't even make the playoffs the next year, like the 2010 Hawks.
Yeah. So, that's the bed the Hawks have made for themselves. It's going to be interesting to see how they get out from it this offseason.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the offseason, trying to get some of these younger guys, I mean, maybe even looking more into their AHL affiliate in Rockford and trying to see what other promising prospects there could be, but really looking... it'd be crazy, but to try and trade up to get Alexis Lafreniere, however you pronounce his last name, but he's supposed to be the number one overall pick, and it's amazing. He's like a 4 years younger than me, and he's in the NHL.
Yeah.
Or, like, going
to
be.
He's 18. And he's already considered to be one of the best to come out since probably McDavid.
I think he's getting some pretty solid billing. I think it's going to be a weird year just to see. He's obviously not going to get as much training, but he seems to be a pretty hyped-up prospect. But just the issue of trading up, like, you're going to make... is there a way to do it without making your team worse? Like, because who are you going to have to give up? Like, DeBrincat or Boquist or one of your top prospects? At that point, is it even worth it?
Yeah, well, it looks like that will just about do it for this first week of the Red Zone podcast. And it was good to be back.
Yeah, definitely was. Got a little adjusted at the beginning, but definitely an awesome time to be here with you guys.
Yeah, I think so. We are going to have a bunch more next week, seeing what we can do. Joey Dwyer should be back, but we had a great show planned for you guys today. Big thanks again to Leo Stauder, Joe Kendi. Leo, how'd you feel? This was your first show.
A little scary at first, But I think I pressed all the right buttons and things went well. I'm just excited to keep it going. Hopefully, just make it even better next week.
I think so. Well, Joe Kennedy, thanks again for being on the show from our news and sports department. We talked about some Redbird sports, the bubble versus normal season, the MLB, and the NHL. If you miss any part of this podcast, it will be online shortly at WZND.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at WZND Sports and on all our social media platforms as well, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for 1033 WZND as well at 1033 WZND. Well, looks like that will just about do it for us. Stick with us. We'll be back here next week at six, for Leah Sauter and Joe Kennedy. I'm Anthony Ferretti saying so long. You've been listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 1033 WZND,
the Pulse of Redbird Nation.